This is a story that goes back, well, I guess it's been probably close to 8 months since we spoke with this gentleman last. He has in his care a very unusual, very significant artifact. It is a skull. What type of skull? Well, that is the million-dollar question. It appears to be almost childlike, although it has certain attributes that would rule out it being entirely human. Some have suggested it might be an alien-human hybrid. It is known as the Star Child Skull. And the author of the book, The Star Child Skull, Genetic Enigma or Human-Alien Hybrid, joins us on the line once again. Lloyd Pye, welcome back to News Talk 1010 CFRB. How are you?
I'm fine, Richard, and thank you for inviting me to be back on. It's good to be with you and have some news to share with you and your audience.
Well, exactly. That's why we brought you back on. But before we get to the big news, let's just dial back a little bit. And for those who aren't familiar with this amazing artifact, just give us the Reader's Digest version of what this thing is. I shouldn't say thing. I mean, this is that belongs to some sort of sentient being. We're not sure exactly yet, although we may be getting close. How did it come into your care, and what does it look like, and where did it come from?
Well, the backstory in a nutshell is that it's a real, true bone skull relic. It's not an artifact. It's a relic. Artifacts are affected by the hand of man. This is a legitimate, clearly a skull, no question about it.
Thank you for that. That's an important clarification.
Somebody had to do it for me one time too. I was surprised to learn that distinction. But anyway, it's a real, true bone skull. Without any questions, many scientists have dealt with it. No one suggests that it's a fake in any way. This is the real deal. What we have to determine is, within that parameter, what is it exactly? It is a skull that does not have the standard human shape and about two dozen major differences within the physiology of the skull itself. The bone, for example, is half as thick uniformly as normal human bone. It weighs half as much as normal human bone, and yet it's two or three times as hard as normal human bone. It has much more collagen in the bone than normal human bone has. It has collagen to a level that makes it more like tooth enamel, which is one of the reasons it's so hard to cut. The eye sockets are completely different, very much shallower. The optic foramens have been moved to a different position away from normal human eyes, and yet they're perfectly symmetrical. The whole skull is perfectly symmetrical. It's missing its frontal sinuses. The shape of the parietals, the rear part of the head, is completely different. The occipital is flattened out in a very unnatural and unnormal way from human skulls. The knot that we all have at the bottom rear of our head, if everyone reaches their hand around to the rear of their head about two-thirds of the way down, in the middle, you'll feel a knot where your neck connects to your head. Everybody has a bump back there, all chimps, all gorillas, all primates. If you've got a head sitting on a trunk, you have that raised out bone there, that little bump. The Star Child does not have that. In fact, it has a dent where we all have a bump. So that's a big change. The neck is shifted forward a full inch from where the foramen magnum comes in, the hole that allows your spine to enter your head. It's moved way forward from a normal human. The neck itself is reduced to about half the size of a normal human neck. The chewing muscles are about half the size. The lower face is half or less than a normal human lower face. It's just these things go on. This is not a normal human skull.
Let me just interject here. Lloyd Pye is with us, writer, researcher, lecturer, and the caretaker of what has been called the Star Child Skull. If you log on to the website, starchildproject.com, I urge you to get onto the site quickly as we discuss this, starchildproject.com. You can see pictures of the skull, and then on the cover of the book, The Star Child Skull, you can see a rendering of what this skull would look like were it to have, flesh put on it. And there you will see a most remarkable rendering. This definitely is a human-like entity. Now, it's you mentioned the eyes. They're large, almond-shaped eyes, I guess, that some people associate with the sightings of gray aliens. And again, the speculation that it could be a human alien hybrid, but this is not a child. It's called the Star Child Skull, but you don't believe, or the research suggests, that this is not necessarily a child's skull, correct?
That's exactly right. The first thing we did, Richard, was we took it in for a series of fluoroscopic x-rays, and what they revealed was not only that it had no sinuses and it had a number of things that were unique about it, but also with the skull, it is a piece of maxilla, which is the upper right part of your jaw. If you stick your finger in the middle of your top jaw and that little the dent in where your lip is and pull around to the right, the whole upper right jaw of the Star Child, we have it. It's detached from the skull, but the piece was found with the skull, and so, you know, we have that. When we x-rayed that, we found that while there were two teeth still down and three teeth had been were missing, the three front teeth were missing, but the two rear ones were there. In the upper part of the bone, there were also teeth. So the people doing the x-ray said, well, if you have teeth down and you have teeth up, that has to be a child. So let's say this is, you know, and it was smallish for a human skull, too, so it would be more like an adult 5 feet tall or an average 12-year-old. So we didn't have any problem at first saying, well, then it's probably a child. Later, on careful examination of the teeth and other parts of the skull by other experts, we found that the teeth had been very heavily worn, more than any 5 or 6 year old could wear a baby tooth before it would lose it. And not only that, when we extracted the rear of the two teeth for DNA testing at a later point, we found that it had big, thick, heavy roots that made the tooth very hard to pull out. And baby teeth, the roots are dissolved back into the body before they fall out. So baby teeth don't have roots. Anybody that's had children knows that.
All right. Lloyd,
we now know that it really wasn't a child.
All right, Lloyd, stay put. We'll come back and continue to discuss the Star Child skull. We'll find out about what initial DNA testing has told us about the skull and future or breakthroughs in DNA testing and what they might promise to tell us as well. Lloyd Pye is with us. The book, The Star Child Skull, the website, starchildproject.com. Stay with us here on The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. Lloyd Pye is here, author, researcher, lecturer, caretaker for the Star Child Skull. Genetic enigma or human alien hybrid? And just a few more moments yet on sort of the backstory. Again, who found the skull and where, Lloyd?
Well, it was found in 1930 by a young girl of Mexican extraction who had gone with her family to see their old home village about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua, which is not far from the Copper Canyon area. It's a high desert, rough scrubland area, kind of like northern Arizona, if anybody's been down there. And while there, while visiting, she was told not to go in the mine tunnels or the caves of the area because it was dangerous and taboo and just don't do it. So she snuck off as soon as she could. She found a mine tunnel some distance from the village and went in and saw lying on its back a full human skeleton, which she was familiar with and from biology in high school, and so she wasn't particularly intimidated, and she noticed a hand coming out of a mound of dirt to the side of that skull lying on its back, and that hand was wrapped around the upper arm bone of the human. So she was able, because the grave was in a mine tunnel and was not compacted by rain or anything like that, she was able with her own hands to dig it out, and she found another skeleton there. She tried, which she called misshapen and smaller than the other one, and we know that the human lying on the ground was about 5 feet tall based on the size of the skull. She tried to recover the two skeletons in full. I go in great detail in the story about that story in the book. Don't have time for it now, but basically she ended up with the two skulls rather than the whole skeletons. She kept them as souvenirs for her whole life, And then when she found out she was dying in the early 90s, she willed them to some friends of hers who kept them for an additional 5 years, but they were uncomfortable with two skulls in a cardboard box in their garage in El Paso, Texas. So they found another couple, Ray and Melanie Young, who were, they felt would be more comfortable with it because Melanie was a neonatal nurse and would be okay about having a deformed skull, which is what they thought it was, just the skull of a deformed human, in their possession. Melanie, when she saw it, she knew right away, because she understood human deformity, that this was not a deformity. Number one, it was way too light to be a human skull. And number two, it was, though it was very strange looking, it was too symmetrical. The human deformity is all about asymmetry and not looking right.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And so this one just looked perfect. Just everything about it was symmetrical. So even though it was weird, even though it was different, it was symmetrical, and it was too light, and she knew something was odd about it. But also, she and her husband belonged to the El Paso area MUFON, Mutual UFO Network chapter, and so they had heard enough lectures and knew enough about supposed alien beings to realize that this looked an awful lot like how grays are described, with their bulging upper heads with the crease down the middle. This had a crease in the back of the skull, something that humans don't have. That's another of those physiological differences. And it had a very narrow, small, tiny lower face. You could see that much. So she and her husband thought that this could be the skull of a gray, and that was the operating hypothesis that we started out this whole thing. So they wanted to prove what it was. They had full-time jobs and couldn't do it. They talked to me when I came through El Paso speaking there and asked me if I would take it to scientists and try to get it verified to find out what it was. And I thought that would be an easy job.
And you put the rest of your life on hold to shepherd this.
It'll be in February. It'll be 10 years.
All right. Listen, we've got news awaiting at the bottom of the hour, Lloyd. When we come back, let's talk about the rigorous testing and research that you've shepherded this important relic through. We'll talk about that. The Starchild Skull, Genetic Enigma or Human Alien Hybrid. Lloyd Pye, author of The Starchild Skull, joins me, and we hope you'll join us as well at 416-872-1010. 416-872-1010. Star Talk, Star 8255. Toll free from out of town here on The Richard Serrett Show, 1-800-561-CFRB. Right now, Lloyd Pye is with us, caretaker for the last 10 years of an amazing relic. They're calling it the Star Child Skull, starchildskullproject.com, the website. I urge you to get on up to the website, check it out, and let us know what you think. All right, Lloyd, the DNA testing, now this was a real interesting rigmarole for you, because you had to get a lab that was willing, I guess, to put its own reputation on the line in order to agree to test something like this.
That's right. There were at first several that turned us down because they didn't want anything to do with it. So it took a while to get one that could do ancient DNA and would handle this. Eventually we did in 2003, and we were very lucky to get a couple of good young geneticists, Jason Eshelman and Rip and Molly at Trace Genetics, to do it for us. And what they found was extremely interesting. This is in 2003 now. Understand, at that time, you had to do DNA testing with primers, DNA recovery with what were called primers. And primers are strings of base pairs, a few hundred to a few thousand base pairs long. So they're kind of like keys that go into locks. They go into a solution where the DNA is, and they pull out, they connect with the lock, and they connect with their counterpart, and you can then do comparisons. And, you know, it's how they find murderers or do parental testing, things like that. But for this, when it came time to do the Star Child's DNA, there's two types you can recover. There's mitochondrial DNA and there's nuclear DNA. The nuclear DNA fits in the nucleus of all of our cells, and that comes from both of our parents. That's our total genome. That's 3 billion base pairs, roughly. That's all 46 chromosomes, 23 from mom, 23 from dad, all 25 or so thousand genes, and 3 billion base pairs. That's the smallest unit.
But that would essentially tell us who dad is, correct?
Right, but we're talking first in the mitochondrial DNA. Let's talk about that first. Mitochondrial DNA floats in little chips like little grains of sand outside the nucleus, and those are about 16,000 base pairs long. Now, mitochondrial DNA comes from our mothers. Males and females have it, but it only passes down through our mothers. So that tells us what our mothers were like. So when it came time to get the star child's DNA, the first thing we noticed was that we couldn't cut the bone very easily. It was much harder to cut than the human bone was, even though it was half as thick and weighed half as much. A big surprise there. Then when they tried to dissolve it in the normal solvents that will dissolve human bone in a week, the star child bone could not be dissolved. It just never did dissolve in that solvent. It had to be dissolved in something very special, a very strong detergent. But ultimately, so right away we knew then, something's really wrong about this bone. And then when the mitochondrial DNA was recovered, it was a very easy recovery, telling us that the bone had not been damaged by being buried in the mine tunnel for 900 years, because we had earlier found out through carbon-14 dating that the bone was 900 years old. So it was an easy recovery of the star child's mitochondrial DNA, meaning we had a grip on its mother. And its mother was from haplogroup C, which is a typical Mesoamerican human haplogroup, nothing unusual about it. So we know the star child's mother is human, and we're halfway there.
A Native American. Okay. Native American.
Native American, exactly. Nothing odd about it at all.
Now, let me just stop you there. Just a clarification. The star child skull found in a mine, a makeshift grave perhaps, next to a Mesoamerican female.
Right. We tested her DNA as well. Now, we got her mitochondrial DNA, and we found that she was from haplogroup A. Her mother, the mother of that human being, was from haplogroup A. So had she had children, she would have passed that on to them, meaning the star child could not be her child.
Ah, okay.
So haplogroup A, star child from haplogroup C, they were not genetically related. They were not mother and child. And we had assumed that for quite a while, that she could well have been its mother. Certainly, she buried it, and then she laid down beside it and killed herself. So we assumed that meant that was its mother, but it wasn't. So anyway, it came time to do the star child's nuclear DNA. Now we know it's easy to recover, and the mother's human, so we're thinking this is going to be an easy recovery, and we'll know what's what. In six full attempts, we could get no recovery nuclear DNA. That meant unambiguously that Dad was not human, not an ordinary human, not a normal human, because if he had been, we could have easily recovered in one of those, and probably the first time we would have had a recovery, and that would have been it. The star child would have had two human parents, and that would have been the end of it in 203.
In other words, the fact that you couldn't recover it doesn't mean that the nuclear DNA was unviable. It just means undetermined origin.
Well, it means that human primers, which is all we know to go by, could not attach to it. So there's something very non-human about it.
But we know that it is definitely half-human.
Right. We know it's definitely not half-human. When you say that, Richard, it's easy to get confused and think that in hybrids it's going to be 50-50, when in fact you and I favor our father or our mother more than one more than the other, because it doesn't go 50-50 usually. It can be 60-40. It can even be
fair enough.
Naturally. You see what I'm
fair
saying?
Fair enough, yes.
In terms of which parent the things activate that create us. So if you do it in a lab, if you do it, by genetic engineering, you can make it 95-5. You can make it 90-10. You can make it whatever you want. But because the mother part of the equation is human, the mitochondrial DNA is going to show up as human. So
yeah, somewhere in its ancestry there was a human female progenitor.
Right.
Okay.
But as far as the father goes, it could be 90% like its father, and we're not going to know that just from the fact that it wouldn't pick up primers in 2003. So what we needed, what the geneticist said, is, look, we know what this thing is, but nobody can say that for sure, because we need to recover its entire genome. We need to recover all those 3 billion base pairs in order to lay that down next to a human genome, a chimp genome, a gorilla genome, and we'll be able to tell you then And I said, well, how are we going to do that? And they said, well, you give us 3 to 5 years. We know what's going on in the field. In about 3 to 5 years, we're going to have a test that will allow that to happen.
And all right. Let me stop you right there, Lloyd. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and we'll find out whether, in fact, that capability is, in fact, here now. Lloyd Pye is the caretaker of the Star Child Skull, the Richard Serra Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. Lloyd Pye is with us. For 10 years, he has had the privilege, I guess you could say, of caring for a very remarkable relic. It is a human, well, part human, perhaps, skull. We're not sure exactly whether the father is alien or what, extraterrestrial or whatever the case may be. It is not a child skull, although we're calling it the Star Child Skull. Do you regret calling the book the Star Child Skull? I mean, who came up with that name? Because it is a misnomer.
Yeah, it was. When it happened, Richard, it was kind of a pressure situation. When I saw it the first time in El Paso, I was on my way to a UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, where there was going to be a large gathering of a number of UFO experts, and I was not an expert at that time in UFOs or even that interested in it. So I asked the owners, I said, could I please take it with me to this meeting of people? And we'll try to find out something about it. And they let me do that, and that's where we got the x-rays and done and some of the first testing that we did. Well, at that conference, they said you have to have a name for it that has some kind of pizzazz, some kind of sizzle that will interest our crowd. And so we thought, because of that x-ray, that it was a child. So I said, you know, we worked on it, and we came up with the Star Child Skull. Looking back, yes, I regret. That was a mistake, because it automatically prejudices science to thinking that we have our minds made up in advance, when we didn't really. But for our own people, we made that choice for a name, and it didn't work to our advantage. But once that name was on it, that was it. It was the Star Child Skull, and it's been that for 10 years, so I had no choice but to call the book that. And that's what it is now. For better or worse, even though we're confident it was an adult, it's the Star Child.
And as you mentioned, the female... The woman that was her remains found next to this, she had some sort of a relationship with this entity. They may have been, for all we know, romantically involved, but she or simply great or good friends. But
a caretaker, yeah, could be anything like that. You're
but
right.
You're saying that it's clear that she took her own life after she buried this.
It couldn't be really any other way. If the Star Child is buried in a grave, as the girl said, as the woman said later in life, and a skeletal hand is sticking out, she put that hand out, and she laid down, and she wrapped that hand around her own upper arm bone. She had to die with it. So whether she took poison or cut her wrist or did whatever, we don't know, but she died with it. So, and they both, when we carbon 14 their respective skulls, they both came out at 900 years ago, plus or minus 40 years, which is an amazing confluence of dates, given carbon-14's, the usual spread. So there's almost no doubt it happened the way she described it, and they died together.
Okay, now, you mentioned that the DNA tests show that mitochondrial DNA shows conclusively there is a female human ancestry in there at some point, but the mitochondrial or the nuclear DNA is not giving up the identity of the father.
Right.
So,
when that happened, we knew that we had to wait 3 to 5 years to get a test that would tell us that. And sure enough, 3 years later, almost to the month, in 2006, a company named 454 Life Sciences in Connecticut announced that they could, in fact, now sequence DNA on a base pair by base pair basis. And so we had exactly what we needed. The problem was, it was horrifically expensive. The only thing they were doing at the time, where they started right in on, was the Neanderthal, because they want the Neanderthal answer, and they've been working on it for a couple of years, and they told me that the cost has been several million dollars. Well, we can't come up with, you know, chump change to get tests done, much less that kind of money, so we just had to wait our turn. Well, now it's down to a price about $200,000 5 years later, where it's within reach of a television documentary company in England that has notified me that they are interested in doing a show, having the testing done, filming some backstory scenes, and going through the testing, because they've studied it enough to know what we know, what I'm telling you, which is that when that full genome can be laid down against a human, or even part of it, really, just even part of it, can be laid down against a human, a chimp, a gorilla, and the Neanderthal at that point, it should be done, the Neanderthal should be done by then, you will be able to see very clearly where it lays in reference to those others. Now, keep in mind, if a human is down on the table, a chimp is only 3% different. A gorilla is only 5% different. The Neanderthal is going to fall somewhere between the chimp and the human, so somewhere within 3 percentage points, the Neanderthal is going to fall. The mainstream says it's going to be very close to the human. I and others claim that it's going to be closer to the chimp. I don't think Neanderthals were our ancestors at all. So it's just a matter of time there, and that deals with my other research into human origins and things like that. But the star child will be able to be put down against it. And what I'm telling you, and what we all know who really have read the book, and anybody that knows the details knows this, there are so many physiological differences in that skull, those couple of dozen that we talked about earlier. Each of them is made that way by the direction of its genes being different from human genes, or you would have got a human look to it. So when you have that many genetic differences just within the skull, you know, you absolutely know that the rest of the body had to be pretty doggone different as well. But even if everything else from the neck down is perfect, perfectly human, that head and that neck that we know of is so different that there's going to be a significant percentage of difference away from a human just right there. Enough to where we can say this can't possibly be a human being. And so we're going to know that it's an alien. And one of the things people say is, well, how can you call it an alien? You're just going to have to say it's some other kind of human. Well, no. Because what if it's over 3%? What if it's close to 3%? What if it's 5%? It's as different as a gorilla, and you're going to tell me that it's just some kind of a deformed human? No, that isn't going to fly. They may try that, but that isn't going to fly. We're all going to know this is not even close to a human being, and that's what I'm betting, and I believe that's what the documentary producers are willing to bet.
All right, Lloyd Pye stays with us, author of The Star Child Skull, Genetic Enigma or Alien Human Hybrid. Weigh in with your thoughts at 416-872-1010. Star Talk, star 8255, toll free from out of town, 1-800-561-CFRB. Check it out for yourself, www.starchildproject.com. We'll wait for your response on the other side. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010, CFRB. So the documentary that's coming out on the Star Child Skull, Lloyd Pye, they have committed then to put up the money for this DNA, to crack the genome, basically, of this relic.
Right, that's it. They've put up $200,000, which I was stunned that they were willing to do it, but because that's normally the budget for a documentary, so they're going to go in the hole on this one. But they believe, as we believe, that it's really history in the making, and it's going to make history as big as history can be made. So they'll make their money back and then some, I'm sure.
Well,
that's it. It's a little bit of a roll of the dice, but not that much.
Well, history in the making, an understatement, because this would, if this relic is in fact part human and part extraterrestrial, would change everything we think we know about the origin of the species, to quote Darwin. I mean, this is in sharp contrast to Darwinism. It's in sharp contrast to creationism. It's in sharp contrast to intelligent design. This is a theory that you're a proponent of called intervention.
Right. Well, I think the evidence is there. I think we've got it. I think we've had it really since 203. I mean, we knew in 203 what we had. It's just a question of proving it in a way that science can't argue about it. I mean, remember, the DNA is their weapon, Richard. I mean, this is the one of the rare chances of life where you get to run someone through with their own sword. And this is, you know, you take it out of their hands and you run them through with it. And that's what DNA can do. It's incontrovertible, really, because you can do it and you can do it again and you can do it again and you can do it again. It just simply is so complex. It's so complicated. And the answers are so definitive that there's just no way around it. They have to go, you know, if it turns out our way, there's nothing they can say about it. Except, oh, ouch, it hurts. You know, I don't want to say I'm wrong, but it, just the same way, by the way, that if it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't turn out our way, we've got to take the lick too. But I'm pretty sure it's going to go, I'm confident, very confident it's going to go our way because we have the evidence from 203 and we also have just the stark physiological differences and they stack up pretty high. And when you look at that many genetic differences in a skull, and just a skull, there's really no way that that can turn out to be a deformed human being. We would have already had that result in 203 with the genetic testing if that were the case. If that father was a human being, a normal human being, that DNA test would have pulled it out and shown it.
All right, we've got news at the top of the hour. Can you stay with us?
Absolutely, love to.
All right, thank you.
I want to tell people how to get the book, too.
Excellent, yes. StarChildProject.com, the website. Lloyd Pye is with us, the caretaker of this absolutely amazing relic, a relic that could change the course of human history. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. However, right now, Lloyd Pye stays with us. This is another shocking and amazing story. He is the caretaker of a relic. They're calling it the Star Child Skull. Is it part human, part alien? We may be very close to proving that it is, in fact, just that. So, again, Lloyd, talk to me about this this genome project, if you will, because what do they compare it to? I mean, how do they ascertain, you know, the origin, if there's nothing on this planet in existence to compare it to?
Well, it's exactly what I said earlier. You compare it to humans, which, of course, we know, to chimps and gorillas, and by then the Neanderthals. We're going to have four primate types there to compare it to, and then we just see how far away it ends up from human, and then from that point we can establish, look, if it's only just a fraction away from human, it's not human. I mean, human is human. It's got to fall
right
within a 99.99 percentile, or it's too far from being human to be human. It's
but how do we? But we can't say we will never. Will we ever be able to say that it is of extraterrestrial origin?
Well, it's going to have things that are not going to match up with human, with chimp, with gorilla, with Neanderthal. It's going to have things that are unique. So where else are you going to find those things except off Earth? I mean, there is nothing else to go with. So, yeah, there's going to come a point where the differences will be so great where you're just going to have to say this is of alien origin. There'll be just no option.
All right, let's say hello to Claire in Toronto. Welcome to News Talk 1010, Claire.
Hi. I know that what I'm going to say is going to be not received, but that's okay. I'm used to that. I'm just going to say it anyway for what it's worth. And you can put it on the back burner, your guest. I just want him to just open his mind to that, put it on the back burner. There was a theory about 25 years ago. I heard a lot of it, and I'm going to go back and try and dig it up. But they were trying to find the genes of they thought they had the blood of Jesus Christ from the cross that fell in the ground and somebody dug up and extracted and all sorts of story. They found a female chromosome and the different things at which they had the instrumentation to do that kind of testing at that time. And they, I'm sure they have better ones now, but they could not find this, the father, the DNA for the father for the, from the blood, but they knew it was a female, progenitor. And there's also a biblical theory that had extraterrestrials trying to imitate the birth of Jesus Christ for several times, and to me that is just a confirmation that some of those things are still ongoing. I mean, you see some of these things in movies that they produce with all kinds of people with extraterrestrial qualities and parts and to their personality. I suspect that they're still trying to do that. And you know, like Mary said, she didn't have any relationship with a man. And they're trying to reproduce something like what the virgin birth is, to present to the world as another Christ.
Okay, let me just stop you there, Claire, because first of all, what you're saying is interesting, and I, too, am intrigued by the idea, for example, that they did find what appears to be human blood on the Shroud of Turin. And I've always wondered myself if that DNA on there was viable. If the DNA from your relic, Lloyd, after 900 years is viable, perhaps the DNA on the Shroud of Turin would be viable. And if, in fact, it could we could show the mitochondrial DNA was of female origin, human female origin, and that the male, the nuclear DNA, is of unknown origin, that would go a long way, perhaps, of proving that Jesus' father himself was an ET, although of a different order. So
that would be a good thing to do, actually, if you could recover viable nuclear DNA from the Shroud of Turin. Now, I personally don't really believe that's very likely, because blood can be degraded by exposure, meaning out in the wind, out in the rain,
sure,
in the sun particularly. For example, the Kennewick man, very famous skull and skeleton that was found a few years ago. They could not extract any DNA from it, not mitochondrial, not anything, because though it was an important relic, they couldn't, because it had been out in the sun, it had been bleached by water, it had just been. The great thing about the Star Child's DNA is that it was in a mine tunnel for 900 years, and it's practically like new. The mitochondrial DNA, as you can see in the pictures in the book or on the website, you can see that they came up in the gel sheets very clearly, very bright and clear. And as the geneticist said, this is almost like fresh DNA. So
could it be, Lloyd, God forfend, used for cloning purposes?
That the Star Child's DNA could be used for cloning?
Yes.
That's possible, sure.
Mm.
Not right now, but I think certainly within the next 10, 20 years, yeah, sure.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Claire, thank you for your comment. And we welcome Susan to News Talk 1010. Good evening, Susan.
Oh, hi. When I first heard about this skull, I thought maybe it was finally some evidence of a Sasquatch or a skunk ape. And the Indian legends are filled with the stories of Indian maidens being abducted by Sasquatches and having babies by them.
Interesting theory.
I know a lot about that subject, but these are like apples and oranges. A Sasquatch has a primate face. This does not have a primate face. This has a much more human-like face, in that it doesn't have huge brow ridges. It has, in fact, it has almost no brow ridges. It has very shallow eye sockets, so it's too far away from the standard description of all hominoids, not just Sasquatch or Bigfoot, but all four of the types of hominoids that there are. So it's just not a comparison. Plus, it's too small.
All right, Susan, thank you for that nonetheless. So, Lloyd, give me the breakdown on the timing of this. The actual testing begins when?
We hope, if everything goes right, we hope that it'll begin sometime around March. It'll last 3 or 4 months. Middle of the year, the testing should be done. They will edit and cut the tape, the videotape, and turn it into a TV show. And we hope that the show will be on air in fall of next year, about now next year. It takes about a year to put one of these things together.
And the company that's going to conduct this test, do we know yet the name?
Well, the producer is a man named Matt Richards in England. He's a well-known, award-winning documentary producer, and he'll be working with one of the main companies there in England and one of the main companies here in the States. They, right now, I'm still not able to say who they are. We can't do that till the contracts are signed, but I can assure you they're big names that you would know if you heard them.
I'm just sort of imagining those in the halls of academe sort of lining up once this comes out to try and discredit this, shoot it down. It'll be akin to the defense team for the OJ trial. You know that they'll try and.
Well, the beauty of it again is that we can give them samples. I mean, there's plenty of the Star Child skull left. You say, here, run your own. You know, just the great thing about DNA again is it says what it says. And it's not really subject to manipulation because the sample is so big, 3 billion pairs,
yes.
Base pairs, you know, and they all have to look and have the same kind of consistency from the sample. So it's just going to be really hard to manipulate something that size. It's going to just say what it says.
All right, let's grab another call here. Lucy's in Etobicoke. Welcome to News Talk 1010, Lucy.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much. What happens is that I have the website here on my computer, and I wonder, it looks more to me like a sick child, and they've come up with this illness, Morgenlius. How much research has been done into that?
Lloyd, are you there?
We've looked into every kind of deformity that there is. From progeria to aperts to cruzons to, I mean, right on any time anybody, any specialist ever said, well, have you checked this out? We'd say, we'll check it. And we checked everything. We had an expert from Canada, by the way, Dr. Ted Robinson from Vancouver, a craniofacial plastic surgeon. He spent about 6 weeks working on nothing but that, trying to find a human deformity that was a corollary to the Star Child. There is nothing. There is nothing in the books that looks anything really like it. This Star Child stands unique with all of its physiological differences.
And if there was some sort of an illness, that wouldn't explain why the inability to identify or to get a result from the nuclear
exactly.
DNA. You'd still
exactly
have
right.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick time out back with perhaps time for one more question. Lloyd Pye, caretaker of the Star Child skull. www.starchildproject.com. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show. News Talk 1010 CFRB. Lloyd Pye stays with us, the caretaker of the Star Child Skull, the author of a book of the same name, The Star Child Skull.
Richard,
genetic.
Can I tell people how to get that book?
Yes, that was my next question.
Great. I'd like to, before we close out, because it's not, you can't just go to a bookstore and get it. It's not available in bookstores. You have to order it. And you have to order it from the publisher, Bell Lap Books. So go to www.bell, B-E-L-L, like a bell, lap, like a lap in a race, books, belllapbooks.com. So it's three L's in a row, belllapbooks.com, and that is a hardback. You order the hardback through there. Now, that hardback is a collector's edition. I will sign it to you. I will, you know, address it to you so you can get it. And that hardback has, of the 80 pictures in it, 40 of them are in full color, or color. So it's a much nicer version to get, but it is $30. But they pick up, Bell App picks up the shipping. And to Canada, that's like 10 or 10 bucks or whatever it is. Anyway, so it's a good deal. Now, if you can't afford that or don't want to do that, go in with your friends, get a paperback, go to Amazon, just standard Amazon order, and you'll get a paperback, and all 80 pictures there are black and white, and of course I don't sign it because it comes through Amazon, but the point is, get the book if you can, make yourself aware of this because it's history in the making, and you can then tell your friends and explain to your friends who put you down or ridicule you or say, oh, you're crazy to believe in UFOs and aliens. This is the smoking gun we've all been waiting for. And if you read the book, you'll very clearly see from the pictures and understand from the text all the testing that's been done. And it's really in the bag. All we have to do now is just mark time until the testing can be done and the documentary comes out. And as you said earlier, history changes.
All right. Explain, we've just got about 2.5 minutes here, unfair, I guess, in that amount of time, but briefly, intervention theory, what that is.
It's just the idea that creationism is wrong, evolution is wrong, intelligent design is wrong, that human beings were put here by genetic engineering, by intervention from outside the earth. And I believe that the Star Child is going to show that happened at least one time 900 years ago. And once you drive that opening wedge in, Richard, you know the deal. It's like a dike. It's going to get wider and wider as people open up their minds to the possibilities. If it happened once, it could have happened a lot of times. And it'll go all the way back to how we got here, because we really don't fit on this planet. We're very, very different. Our genes are different. It's pretty clear that we've been genetically manipulated, as has all of the domesticated plants and animals, and that's a part of the other research that I do.
Now, Lloyd, I mean, there's so much at stake here, obviously, that, and again, these forces, I contend, will be lining up against you. I'm sure, I mean, you've had a taste of that already.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Do you think that it's possible that this documentary could be suppressed, it'll be yanked off, it'll be prevented from going to air? Do you think that they'll just somehow, you know how they do things?
Eventually it has to happen, though, Richard. The test has to be done eventually. Somebody's going to put up the money eventually. Somebody's going to run that test, and somebody will report the results. So whether it's this documentary or another one, somebody is going to do it, because generally when stories are this big and there's so much at stake, somebody's going to find the cojones to get involved and do it. Now, a lot of people won't, but some will, and I believe that it's just inevitable whether it happens quite on this schedule that we have right now or a little bit later, but too many people know about it. We have too many pieces of that bone parked in different places. They can't stop us. So it's a snowball that's rolling downhill, and it's going to hit eventually.
Well, but unfortunately, you know how some people are. Things don't exist until they appear on the front page of the New York Times, and unless, I guess, some of the mainstream media outlets grab onto this, it won't exist for most people. I hope that's not true.
Right now, through the efforts of people like you, though, thousands and thousands, well, really millions, let's face it. I've been doing this for 10 years. It's millions of people that are aware of this now. The horse is out of the barn. It's pretty much not worth trying to close it now. There are too many people that would know if anything happened to the Star Child, if anything happened to me, if anything happened to this documentary. If anything happens that's out of the ordinary, everybody's going to know. It'll be on your show. It'll be on radio shows. It'll be on TV. People will know. So it's just like, I just think the process is too far gone to call it back now.
Well, Lloyd, we wish you all the luck, and we'll check in with you, I guess, in about 4, 5, 6 months' time, once the DNA testing is out, the Genome Project is complete.
LAPBooks.com.
BellLapBooks.com.
All one word, BellLapBooks, all one word, right.
Excellent. Lloyd, always a pleasure. Thank you for this.
Thank you, Richard, for having me on. Look forward to being on again with you sometime.
Radio. Bye-bye.